The message that I'm going to be giving here this morning, it was one that I talked over with the staff team actually this week. I gave them two possible messages that I was considering before the Lord because they were pushing me to give them the passages and stuff so they could prepare before they left for the church conference that they're at starting on Thursday. And so I told them, I said, I have to make a final decision. Help me. And I gave them the two possibilities, and they went with this one and said, this is the one, Paul, that you should deliver. And so this is what you're getting here this morning. And Elena, when she was speaking, she referred to this passage as well a couple of weeks ago, and that also got me thinking more about it. And the nice thing was for this Sunday morning as well and for next Sunday, and that is that I had the privilege of being able to choose anything I wanted to speak on. And so you're getting something that is close to my heart here this morning. And so let's journey on this together. Does that sound good? Yeah? Okay. The passage opens up by telling us that the nation of Israel has fallen into a place where their enemies have been severely oppressing them now for a number of years. And not just mild oppression. This is severe oppression. They are under attack in ways that where it's described as being the fact that it's like locusts coming into the land. And any of you have ever seen any sort of documentary or news thing on locusts, when they come into the land, it's devastating. They leave nothing green alive anymore. And they basically leave the land so that it appears lifeless. And they're saying these enemies were so many that this is exactly what they were doing. They're coming into the land, coming into their stories, and leaving their stories to literally feel lifeless. And the people are crying out to God and that for deliverance. What's fascinating, though, and I want you to be able to catch this, is that the first thing God does is not send them a deliverer. He sends them a prophet. And basically, the role of the prophet back then was to be able to be somebody who was a messenger from God. And they were basically delivering a message to the people saying, this is what the Lord's saying to you. And the first thing it starts off with is this. The Lord was faithful to you. He was faithful to you. He hasn't changed his caring, compassionate position. He has been faithful to you. But you were unfaithful, despite everything he did to remove you from a place where your story was not your own and bring you to a place where your story was filled with life. You have chosen to put your trust in things outside of God. And therefore, God has allowed to happen what is happening. The people are in despair. They keep crying out. Now, all of a sudden, in an obscure little place in Israel, and I mean obscure, and that because even Gideon later, when he describes it, he describes his place where he lives as being obscure. But it's interesting to be able to see how this all takes place. And in verse 11, I just want you to be able to catch this with me. And that is that it opens up by this, and it says, an angel of the Lord sat under the tree. I've never noticed that before. And I have spoken on this passage numerous times. I've never noticed that before. But all of a sudden, I saw it for the first time, and I thought to myself, isn't that fascinating? The angel of the Lord appears. Gideon doesn't see him. The angel of the Lord is invisible to everybody else around him. And yet, what's he doing? He goes and casually sits underneath a tree in a restful position and just begins to observe. And I'm thinking to myself, what hit me on this? And would you build solid theology on this? I don't know, but I'm going to share it with you anyway. And that, because I found it delightful for my own heart. And that is, how many times is the presence of the Lord, his messengers, his angels, his very presence, so real all around me, but I don't see it. But I don't see it. I don't see what he's doing. I don't even see what he's prepared to do. And yet here, the angel of the Lord simply takes a casual position, resting under the tree. And what it tells us is Gideon is doing, and that Gideon is threshing grain. Now, basically what that meant was after they had harvested their grain, they would bring it down, they would beat it to be able to separate the kernels from the stalk, and then they would throw it into the air to separate the chaff and that from the wheat. So the kernels of wheat would fall down, the grain would fall down, and they would have that and harvest it. But he's doing it in a place where it's secret, it's hidden. And the reason he's doing it there is because he's terrified of the fact the Midianites will discover that he's got food, even though he's living in an obscure place in Israel. And so he's hiding out of terror and hiding in a wine press, doing it there. And then all of a sudden it tells us that the angel of the Lord then appears. And the word literally means revealed. Suddenly reveals himself. Now, I don't know if he's still underneath the tree. and just talking from there, or if he's standing on the edge of the wine press. But how many of you have encountered somebody in a moment where you have not been expecting them? Ever had that moment? Yes, a few of you. My grandson's even putting up his hand. Yep. And that I had it happen last night. I was sleeping in the basement of our home with our three grandkids, and all of a sudden I woke up because I felt this something touch my face, and 6 inches from my face was my granddaughter waking me up to be able to ask me a question at midnight. And I literally jumped back on the couch that I was sleeping on thinking, oh, who is this? And then she's looking at me, and all she does is she just gently shakes her head like, oh, Papa. It's a terrifying moment when all of a sudden you see somebody in a position where you're not expecting them. Gideon is rightly afraid at this moment. But what's interesting, though, too, is he's also perplexed by the message that this person standing there is giving him. And the message is simple, and that it's, mighty warrior, the Lord is with you. And I'm sure Gideon now is not only perplexed by the fact that this angel is standing before him, which he's not sure is an angel, by the way, he doesn't really know who it is at this point. But now he's also perplexed by the message. Mighty warrior, who are you talking about? And he's looking around himself like, what, who? And that, you can't possibly be me. And then he says, he reflects, though, and responds to the comment, the Lord is with you. Catch this, going on in verse 13 on here. It says, pardon me, sir, Gideon replied. You say the Lord is with us. Now catch what he says here. Then why has all this happened to us? Where are all the wonderful things he has done? Our people of long ago told us about them. And they said, didn't the Lord bring us up out of Egypt? But now the Lord has deserted us. He has handed us over to our enemy. And I want you to be able to appreciate this for a very strong reason here. And that is that a prophet from the Lord has already been going through the land telling them, this is why you're in the spot you're in. This is why you're in the spot you're in. You have deserted God. He has not deserted you. You deserted him. And he left you to the consequences. He's left you to the consequence. But have they heard the word of the prophet? Have they heard that message from the Lord? And the truth is, no. I mean, here is Gideon, and the first thing he's doing with the angel of the Lord is he's arguing with him. You've got to be kidding. If the Lord's with us, then why is this all happening? Why is this all taking place? Why are things so bad? Why do they seem to be getting worse? Why is it not getting better? If he really is a God of miracles, like we heard about in the past, why aren't those miracles happening now? Well, why isn't the same provision he did then taking place now? Why is this all happening the way that it is if God is indeed with us? Have you ever been there? You don't have to do a show of hands. I'll put my hand up, though. Been there way too many times. Way too many times. And way too many times asking myself, God, where are you? Where are you? We need you. We need to be able to see what only your hand can do right now. We need to be able to see you do things that only you can do. Gideon is asking honest questions. And the amazing thing about it is that the angel of the Lord does not rebuke him for the fact that, hey, haven't you been listening to the prophet? Haven't you been reflecting on the fact that he's already told you why what's happening is happening? You guys failed. You walked away from the Lord. You turned to other gods for your security. You did this. God didn't move. You did. It's interesting. The angel of the Lord doesn't do anything like that. That's a human tendency. It's our tendency to judge others around us and often do it negatively, from a negative perspective. That's where we come from. You are suffering the consequences of your own decisions. It's interesting that the angel of the Lord doesn't do anything like that. But I want us to be able to sort of look at this and just address this for a moment, though. And I realized I should, as I was doing this, putting my notes together on this, I thought to myself, man, this really almost needs a whole separate message. But I just want you to take a few points from this. Why do bad things happen? Why do bad things happen? And even more importantly, maybe, why do bad things happen to good people? There's a lot of books written on this stuff. But let me just share a few simple thoughts on it for you. The first is this. You live in a broken world. You live in a broken world. You live in a world that is not functioning anymore the way that God originally designed it. It is broken. The second thing is, you are surrounded by broken people with broken stories. And therefore, things go bad and things go wrong because you are surrounded by people with broken stories and broken lives. And then finally, you need to remember something, that sometimes the sin that is possibly causing the consequence, and I'm going to address that in a moment here too, is not always yours. Is not always yours. It is the fact that you live in a broken world. It's the fact that that's what takes place. Are all bad things the consequence of sin? Indirectly, yes, they are, because we have rebelled against God, and our world has turned against him. And I'm using the concept of world here in terms of everyone. We have turned against him. Therefore, God has left us to our own consequences. We're reaping, in a sense, the result of that decision. But are all bad things the consequence of sin? No, they are not. No, they are not. They are the fact that we live in a broken world. At the same time, we have to take this into account, and that is this. God will hold you accountable for what you do. And God will hold you accountable for the things that you don't do. God will hold you to account for those things. Gideon is turning to God and saying to him, if you really are here, why are all these bad things happening to us? And the answer is, Gideon, because you live in a broken world. And you're surrounded by broken people with broken stories. And by the way, Gideon, there's also one other thing here too. And that is that in your stories, you have turned away from God. Do you ever read these Old Testament accounts and say to yourself, oh, yeah, you people, you really need to get this. You really need to get that. Unbelievable how long it took you to be able to arrive at the point where you're really able to realize, yeah, you turned away from God. That's what was wrong. Instead of taking a look and saying, God, where in my story have I built other gods? Now, most of us would say, don't have any other gods. I'm pretty certain none of you, don't want to say that 100%, pretty certain that none of you have any idols in your home. Am I right? Pretty much? Fairly confident with that decision? Some of you aren't nodding or doing anything, so now I'm concerned about what you have in your homes. Here's the thing that I want you to be able to appreciate, and that is that in our society in which we live today, what are our idols? What are our idols? What are the things that you put your trust in outside of God? Outside of God. What are those things? I'm going to venture into this with one statement here too, okay? And that is this. One of the things that the people in the land of that Israel took over, that they did, and eventually Israel started doing it as well, was that they not only put up these false gods and began to worship them as if they were the real God, but they began making sacrifices to these gods. And they not only made sacrifices to these gods, they began to offer their own children as sacrifices to these gods. Pretty horrifying, isn't it? Wouldn't you agree? Pretty horrifying? Do we do that today? Our abortion rate in Canada is around 100,000 a year. Some of these are because of the life and health of the mother. I don't question that. But the majority of these are because we are offering our children as sacrifices for something else that we want to be able to live by and for. We need to fear a God that says, that's where you cross the line. That's where you cross the line. We need to fear a God that says to each one of us, and that you live in that broken story. You live in that broken world. And there are consequences for what is taking place. Even if we haven't done it, the question is, it's being done around us. I say that because I want you to be able to understand just how seriously God takes sin, and yet how easy it is for us in our generation, our society, our culture, living here, to be able to say, but we don't do that. Oh, yes, we do. Oh, yes, we do. And for us to deny it is completely false and completely wrong. The angel looks at Gideon and says this to him, "Go and save your people from the power of the enemy. I am sending you." And Gideon's response is fascinating. "Pardon me, sir, how can I possibly save Israel? My family group is the weakest in the tribe of Manasseh, and I'm the least important member of my family." I mean, honestly, if you're looking for somebody right now to be a hero, if you're looking for somebody to be able to pick up the flag and charge, I mean, I'm not your person. I mean, my family is completely insignificant. But not only that, you have been talking to the person who is least significant in the family. Even my own family wouldn't follow me. Why would anybody else? I say this to you because I want you, and I emphasize it this way because I want you to appreciate this. You need to realize something, that for each and every single one of us, including myself, and I need to stop and reflect upon this on a regular basis, God sees me so differently than I see myself. God sees me so differently than everybody else sees me. God sees me differently. And oftentimes, it's because he has a story for me that is far different and far more powerful than I would give tribute to or that anybody else around me would give tribute to. How do you see yourself? Do you see yourself and your story? And how often do you stop to reflect upon that? Do you see your story through God's eyes? And do you see how powerful he sees your story being? And then he makes this unbelievable promise to Gideon, and that, yeah, not arguing with you. You are certainly the weakest clan. I'm not arguing with you. You're certainly the least important person in your family. But I will be with you. But I will be with you, and that's a game changer. That's a game changer. That's the part in the story where it suddenly heads in a new direction. I will be with you. Now, Jen did a great job just explaining why we use that statement as something that we respond to in a regular Sunday morning. I'll just do it again here right now. And the Lord is with you. Why do we remind each other every week of that? Because it's the most powerful game-changing part of your story. It's the most powerful thing that you have going on in your story. It is the most powerful thing, the very fact that God is not only in your story, but he's in your story in a powerful way, that the truth is, you have no idea. You have absolutely no idea what it is that he wants to do through you and around you because you trust him. Gideon is taken back by that, and that, I'm telling you right now, I will be with you. And I'm telling you right now, nobody's going to be able to stand up against you. Nobody. There's no force on earth that can stand up against you when I am with you. And he, by the way, is with every single one of us. And Gideon replied, well, if you really are, and I like the way he puts it, if you're pleased with me. In other words, you've heard my arguments, and some of them, to be quite honest, I realize right now, don't hold much in the way of arguments. But if you've heard my insignificance, and you're still looking at that and saying, that's not a factor either, then I just need you to affirm what you've said. I need you to affirm it. Would you wait? I'm going to bring you a sacrifice. And would you wait? And if you really are a messenger from the Lord, would you wait and accept it? The angel agrees. I will wait until you return. Gideon went inside and prepared a young goat, and from an ephah of flour. And I'm sure every single one of you knows what an ephah is, right? Just because you've worked in a kitchen at least once, right? And so you're all familiar with that. I'm saying that to be able to make sure you're all still listening. And most of you are still looking at me going, a what? A where? A who? And an ephah of flour is about 36 pounds. Now, that doesn't mean he made a 36-pound loaf of bread, all right? What it's saying to you here is that that's all he had. That's all their family had. That's all that was left for their clan. That's what it's trying to tell you here. That from a meager supply, he took something that was precious to the family. And it was a young goat, and it was the flour. And he brought it out as an offering to the Lord to be able to say, I will give you the best of what we've got. I'll give you the best. as a sign of the fact that I'm honoring what you've said. And then he's waiting for a response from God. God, I need you now to show me that you not only accept my sacrifice that I'm making, but you are going to be true to the word of what you've said. He comes out, presents it to the angel, and the angel makes a request that would have just been absolutely horrifying. And that Dave Pratt and I both enjoy cooking. We often talk about cooking stuff together. And Dave, I'm pretty sure if you and I prepared an eloquent meal and brought it out towards somebody, and the angel said, put it on the rock over there. And by the way, that wonderful broth you made with it too, just pour it out over the top of it on the rock. I'm sure Dave and I would be looking at you guys and thinking, you don't deserve what we've just brought you. But Gideon goes ahead and does it. Because I want you to be able to remember this as well. When you turn something over to the Lord, he takes it seriously. And his decision as to what you do with it may seem wasteful in your eyes, and it's not in his. It's not in his. But he's looking to see if your heart will be willing to do what he asks. Gideon puts it out there, and immediately the angel reaches forth. Boom, fire comes out of the rock, consumes it all, and the angel disappears. And Gideon here right now is terrified. He is terrified. I have seen the angel of the Lord. And as far as he's concerned, from his understanding, and the truth is, there are verses that support this in the Old Testament that he would have been somewhat familiar with, and that he should die. I've seen God. That means I'm probably going to be struck dead. I've entered into a place where God is. It's holy. I'm probably going to be struck dead. And he is absolutely terrified. I emphasize that here for you this morning for just one simple reason, and that is that, myself included, we have lost an honest fear of who God is. We've lost an honest fear of who God is. I don't mean that we have to be terrified of him, but we have to hold him in reverence. And reverence means an awe that almost leads to fear. And it's a fear, though, that is not an unhealthy fear. It's a fear of recognizing that you are in the presence of someone who is far more powerful than you could ever imagine. Than you could ever imagine. But in the words of C.S. Lewis in the Chronicles of Narnia, and I'm paraphrasing it, I realize, where Lucy and Susan ask about Aslan being the Christ figure in his book and being a lion. And she asks a simple question, is he safe? And I love Mrs. Beaver's response, of course he's not safe. He's a lion. But he's good. But he's good. We have to have more of a reverential fear of who God really is. Because I can tell you this, I think maybe it's just me mirroring to you my own journey. Maybe that's all this is. But the honest truth is, you will never trust how powerful God can be until you learn to fear him. Because he is so unbelievably powerful that should cause us to remain in an awe, which leaves us with a reverential sense of fear. And Gideon is there. And he cries out, I'm dead. I'm dead. There's no way somebody like me, in the brokenness of my story and everything that I've done against this person, could honestly be in their presence. And I love God's response. The Lord then speaks directly to Gideon, and he says to him, may peace be with you. Do not be afraid. The most often spoken command by Jesus, by the way. Do not be afraid. And that you are not going to die. And Gideon built an altar there to honor the Lord, and he called it the Lord is Peace. And that altar stands there to this day, and that at the time of the writing when they were mentioning this. But I like the way it phrases it because I want you to be able to understand something. This is the first time that God is called Jehovah Shalom, the God who is peace, the Lord who is peace. And that. And it's a covenant of peace. And what are the words of Jesus that he spoke so often to us? Peace. Peace. I bring peace to you. A complete sense of well-being in your story that no matter how you see your story and what's going wrong in your story, God is at work in that story because he is good. But most importantly, he is powerful. He is powerful. Do we firmly believe that the God of peace wants to surround each one of us with that sense of well-being, no matter what our circumstance, so that he can show you not only how good he is, but how powerful he is? And more importantly, are we willing to take him at his word? I invite the worship team to come back up. And my challenge to each one of you here this morning is this, and that is that you will reflect on the story of Gideon this week. And we're going to be picking up on the second part of the story next Sunday. But reflect on the story of Gideon this week and simply ask yourself this very, very simple question, and that is this. God, is there anything between you and me that is stopping me from honestly being able to see your goodness and your power in the story that I live and in the stories of those around me? And God, how can you use me to be able to see things changed in a broken world?